From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made in your assumptions about this music. How do you feel when you hear this? What do you assume about opera? Well, this hour, it's an opera intervention of sorts, and yes, we are starting with a rather stereotypical piece or well-known piece, which is kind of the point. Opera has its devoted fans, but also many people who view it in narrow terms. Women dressed in Nordic dress, belting out songs in indecipherable language, and this piece right here. But what would it take to turn you from opera skeptic to somebody pumping their fists like Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman? I'd call your attention to one of the best scenes in film, and I'm about to play a clip from Shawshank Redemption, when Andy Dufresne, a prisoner played by Tim Robbins, locks the guard in the bathroom so he can give the prison yard something beautiful. Andy gives them opera. Here's the clip. It includes the prisoners in the yard standing rapt, listening to the music, and then you'll hear the voice of Morgan Freeman, who plays the prisoner nicknamed Red.
Day what those two Italian ladies were singing about. The truth is, I don't want to know. Some things are best left unsaid. I like to think they were singing about something so beautiful it can't be expressed in words and makes your heart ache because of it. I tell you, those voices soared higher and farther than anybody in a gray place dares to dream. It was like some beautiful bird flapped into our drab little cage and made those walls dissolve away. And for the briefest of moments, every last man at Shawshank felt free.
Amazing, isn't it, that most of us would ignore a genre that, were we to lose our freedom, it would represent the height of beauty and opportunity, even freedom to our very core. Irony, by the way, is what they were singing about in that song was student loan debt. But they just, that's not true. But opera can be, it could be anything, and it does sound beautiful. Let me welcome our guest for an opera intervention. And this is the brainchild of the great Deborah Fox, the artistic director of Pegasus Early Music, who said, you know, you did a Baroque intervention. It's time the community needed an opera intervention, and so here we are. Thank you for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And also here is Mona Segetolsamy, host on Classical 91.5 from Down the Hall. Always nice to have you on the program.
Nice to be here.
In fact, Mona is responsible for all the music you're going to hear this hour, or at least all of the great ideas. Anything smart this hour comes from her. There's a lot of wonderful people in the opera scene locally who happen to be traveling. This is just the time of year where either they're overseas or preparing, as Finger Lakes Opera is preparing for Tosca, which we're going to get to that in our second half hour. But there's a lot going on. You're going to hear from Maestro Gerard Floriano, the director of Finger Lakes Opera, coming up in our second half hour. And we do want to hear from you. Are you someone who just either can't stand opera, or you don't really think about it, or it's just not very interesting to you? What would it take to change your mind? And we do want to know, Mona, what were they singing about in that piece that the prison yard
did? Oh, you went... I didn't go look it up. I forgot.
I decided
to listen to Morgan Freeman.
But yeah. Morgan Freeman is beautiful, too.
I'll say quickly what changed me on opera, because I grew up not liking it, was just seeing it, that it's a really full theatrical experience. There are great melodies that I love when I hear it now on the radio, but it really was about the theatrical experience of seeing it, the dance, the spectacle, and everything. And I think that's some of what's coming up with Pegasus.
The phone's already ringing, which is good, because our doctors of opera are here to help. Mona, by the way, what was the piece we just heard from Shawshank?
That was a duet cavatina from Marriage of Figaro by Mozart.
Okay, and somebody in the audience is going to call and tell us exactly what they were saying. And it wasn't student loan debt, I'm sure. Deb, for you, when it comes to this barrier that some people have with a genre that maybe they didn't grow up listening to opera, and maybe they view it with some distance, that with some intimidation or some feeling that it's just for sort of the elite, and it's just not accessible. Where do you start with them on that?
Well, opera is a complete art form. It embodies everything. And most of all, it tells a good story. So if you like movies, if you like TV, if you like novels, opera's for you. And it has everything. It has starts with the story. It has beautiful music. It has costumes. It has very often dance.
It has so much murder.
Get it all.
A lot of murder.
Oh, well, look around us. I mean, opera is a reflection of all the stories that we tell in life. And that's the great thing about it, because even if you see it, like, for example, a Wagner opera, which is based on the very, very old Nordic tales, we can still relate to that. In Baroque opera, we can still relate to the tales of Dido and Aeneas, which originally comes from the Greek myths. So there are these archetypal stories about human relationships, and they're just put into music, which I think intensifies the feelings and the text.
I think definitely the intensity of the emotion, that sometimes people say, you know, you hit a point where some emotion is so big it almost doesn't make sense except to do something but sing about it. I mean, Dido and Aeneas, if we're going to jump into that story,
yes.
Here she is, queen of Carthage, and a man sails along, Aeneas, and they fall in love, and she is a great and powerful woman, and there is this guy, and then he has to go on to found Italy.
Yeah, he leaves to found Rome. He's called, yeah. Sort of in a dupe by the gods, he has to leave.
And then she sings this insane, you know, wonderful lament, but so sad because she's like, there's nothing else to live for. I've lost my political power. I've lost my love. And so that seems to make sense, you know, some of the big sentiments in the singing. But also that in it, aren't there, like, there's supernatural things. There's all sorts of entertaining stuff.
Yeah. So it's a story and it has a lot of characters. You have the Queen of Carthage and Prince Aeneas who comes. Then you also have the wicked, evil sorceress who hates Dido and plots against her. You have the witches. Then, of course, you have the drunken sailor who comes in and does a hornpipe. And so all these characters go in and out.
And we're hearing a little bit of Dido and Aeneas, which, by the way, Deborah, since we're talking Dido and Aeneas, Pegasus is putting on Dido and Aeneas, coming up here.
Coming up August 10th, 12th, and 13th. We're in rehearsals as we speak.
Well, you're not.
No, I've gotten dismissed from rehearsal for this hour.
that's very nice. So 10th, 12th, and 13th, mm-hmm. Where?
At the Jewish Community Center at the Hart Theater, which is a beautiful little theater. And it's a full professional production. I believe it's the first professional production of Baroque opera in Rochester. And it's the perfect opera to begin with.
This is a great, I mean, it is an opera for opera lovers, but it's also a training wheels opera for those who might want to come in and say, I want to experience it, but I've never been to opera.
Absolutely. It's in English, first of all. It's not 5 hours long like a Wagner opera. You can digest it in one sitting. And the music is so accessible. You get all the emotions within the space of 90 minutes.
Now, there's a chance that I'm ignorant about opera. So will you forgive my ignorance in
Absolutely.
Questions like this? Okay.
This is wonderful.
Because as we listen right now to some of Dido and Aeneas, this is not English.
No, it is.
Oh, it is English.
Remember me.
All right, Celine, listen. I apologize. Let's listen.
Remember me, but forget my fate.
Yeah,
it tugs at your heartstrings,
yeah,
huh? And once you've been through the whole opera, seeing what she goes through, seeing who's plotting against her, seeing her fall in love with Aeneas, when she sings this at the end, you will cry.
Listeners, I'm going to appeal to people who just don't really like opera or think they don't like opera to call us. And Trudy, we're going to get to you. I know you're an opera fan. Hang in there on the line for a little bit there. But I want to hear directly from people who are not fans or maybe need to be converted, because Deborah is here and she's told me she would not come here unless she could convert every last listener. It's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I have some emails and comments from Twitter as well, which we can get to. And one of the most common complaints that I see is on the subject of language. And I don't know that that's fair or unfair, you know, because you heard Red. Now, I get that Shawshank Redemption is fiction, but I thought that was pretty representative. You had this beautiful piece of music. They did not know what they were singing about. And Red is saying, I don't really care. The emotion is so apparent that it almost doesn't matter. But Deborah, does it matter to much of the audience? And do you think that barrier is a problem?
I think that opera houses have done a lot in the last few years to get rid of that barrier by having super titles. Many opera houses have devices on the backs of chairs so you can see the text as it goes by. I think text is important. Composers began with text for their operas. And to hear how a text is set is important. It's good to know the story ahead of time. But now you can go to an opera in another language and see it as you hear it go by. And that does help. Opera in English is really great, but even we are having super titles for our production of Dido and Aeneas, just because it definitely helps.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Mo, yeah,
the first composers of opera were thinking about, I think, the unity of words and music and their meaning, and that comes out of the late Renaissance to the early Baroque, where people were starting to think, rather than five guys singing in harmony about something, you could have one person, you know, this monody, this one voice, which would express emotion. If it's sighing, it's going down sad. If it's sad, you can have it go down sighingly or different effects. So the unity, that notion from antiquity of the unity in words and music,
yes,
too.
Yes, their idea was that music was to express the text as clearly as possible, and that went over. And actually, when you went to the opera in the 17th and 18th centuries, you were handed a libretto. It was a little pamphlet, and it was the entire libretto. So
and
the audience had that. Yeah, just the words, the text of the opera. So you could follow along.
Which is why the supertitles, you think, is sort of the modern equivalent to give the audience that connectivity.
That's
to
right.
It.
Oh, and it's so nice if you go to the Metropolitan Opera now. It's in the back of your chair, and it's also this thing that's non-reflective, so you don't see your neighbors, you don't see the light, so it's you don't even have to look up and crane your neck. It's right there.
Very nice. Well, but we're going to get to some phone calls. I also want to say this, especially for an opera community. And we do have an opera community, in Western New York, that there's a lot going on here. I can't mention everything, and I don't seek to exclude. There are some really amazing people who, as I mentioned, are overseas right now, who couldn't be here for this conversation. You're going to hear Maestro Floriano from Finger Lakes Opera in our second half hour, as Deborah Fox from Pegasus is here. I know Eastman's got a lot going. I don't want to exclude,
yeah,
but go ahead.
I'm just going to say a few of them. So Eastman Opera, and they're doing a Monteverdi opera and a Philip Glass, so everything from very old to very new this next year. You can travel just a couple hours and go to the Glimmerglass Opera Festival, which is a big deal. There's also opera in Buffalo and Syracuse.
Chautauqua.
And Chautauqua is putting on opera and Geneva Light Opera. So we have a lot in the community in terms of very, and there was one summer a really nice opera group, but that's the other problem is opera. Some people have said it's the only thing more expensive than opera is war, maybe. So
yes.
It's because it involves a lot, all those theaters, all the costumes, and Baroque operas where I think of having the wonder of stage machines, like the Deus Ex Machina was literally God from the machines. Maybe the gods would come down in clouds, so there is this spectacle aspect.
Yes. In the 17th century in France, at the operas that took place at Versailles, there was no expense spared. We have spared a few expenses in ours, but it's also incredibly beautiful and magical.
All right, let me get to your phone calls. Let's see what our audience thinks, and let's go as quickly as we can. We got a lot of people want to win. Okay. Mary in Rochester first. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, I'm enjoying your show, and I learned about opera very early on, reluctantly, I have to admit, because my mother was an immigrant, French-speaking, and she insisted on playing WXXI, 24 hours a day, if possible. If it was possible, it wasn't. I'm not trying to disparage WXXI, but that was when it first started. You know, there was it was classical music most of the time, and so and I had the dubious distinction, I guess. I shouldn't say that. Instead of listening to opera, I would have preferred to hear, you know, not Elvis Presley so much, but, you know, maybe Motown every once in a while. So, but I finally did once I got old enough to get out on my own. There's an opera that was named, my mother was named after, it's called Mignon by Amboise Thomas. Mm-hmm. And I have a YouTube video of the aria, the famous aria from that opera, if you'd like to hear it.
And Mary, thank you. Do you know what she's talking about, Mona?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And that's also, I think you mentioned the your mom coming from France is also... That's if you think of the movie Moonstruck, opera is kind of part of the culture with Italian culture. I've spoken to people who that even they weren't necessarily, you know, thinking they were doing a lot of high culture things. Opera and Italian popular song, all of that sort of overlapped is also part of the Italian opera or immigrant experience, I think.
All right, let's see what other listeners think here. Beth in Rochester next. Go ahead, Beth.
Hi. I just have to say my experience with opera, sometimes I just feel like intimidated by it. Or overwhelmed by it, and one of the things that I think helped me feel a little more comfortable with opera, and that I think that we're lacking here in the United States, I lived in Germany for a while and was working in the international school system, and of course in Germany every town has an opera house, and learning about opera in the school system and then attending an opera, you know, as a result of learning about it, was just embedded in their curriculum. And when the local opera theater was putting on a production, they would come to the school and do workshops and teach the kids about the characters. And we would, as one of your participants said, you know, we learned the story ahead of time. And then when we went, we were more invested in seeing it as well and hearing it and had a fuller concept of it. So I just find, you know, within our educational system, depending on where they are with the funding and the field trips and all that stuff. I know at my school, kids do get out to the RPO, and they have the children's outreach programs there, but I don't know if we have that same level of commitment with the, at this point in the opera community.
Well, I think that's a very true comment about the educational system right now in the United States, because I don't really think of opera as highbrow at all. I think of it as, oh, all my favorite things, a great story and great music. But I would like to give a shout out at this moment to the National Endowment of the Arts, long may it reign, who does programs, educational programs and arts programs in every county in every state of this country.
I have some bad news for you.
Yeah?
Well, I hope it's just for a brief pause. Long may it reign, let's put it that way. The National Endowment of the Arts. Long may the public call for its permanence in our society.
Exactly.
How about that?
Exactly. But we have been very lucky. We are a recipient of an NEA grant for our production of Dido and Aeneas, so they are helping that. But the fact that they are in every county doing programs is very important to raising consciousness about the arts in general.
And I guess I'd say also, as we talk about it, wouldn't say to any one person, you have to be into opera. If it's not your thing, it doesn't have to be. But there's so many different amazing things that are fun that if you've, it's maybe more also you've wanted to, but you feel put off by everyone dressing up really nicely and going to the Met. And what if I clap at the wrong time? Actually, that's the fun part about opera compared to classical concerts. People clap after a big aria, speaking of sort of breaking the dramatic flow. Someone sings a great song, suddenly everyone's clapping, right, and throwing flowers, and they get to sing it over again.
In the 18th century in Venice, for example, everybody would go to the opera, and you would sit in different places depending on what you could afford for a ticket, and there was gambling going on and eating and shouting, and they would shout and clap for their favorite singers, and then the fans of the other singers would shout, and sometimes fights would. And so it was very raucous event and not highbrow at all.
And that's still happening, I think, in Europe. In Milan at La Scala, Roberto Alagna got booed from this one section, and he walked off, and someone else hopped out without a costume and kept singing the part.
Oh, my goodness.
So there is a lot of... That is the other thing that's really fun to get into. I don't know if it's as profound, but there's the great music, and I would love to hear some more of it, but also... There is the fascination of getting into all these singers. Is this diva better than that better? You know, diva Maria Callas, or who's, you know, this one? Are they taking on this role? There's a, I don't want to say sports, but there's a fascination sort of.
And
with
passion.
That. Passion.
There's a passion for it.
That's a good.
Robin, can we listen a little bit more of Dido and Aeneas? I don't know if you got anything accessible or anything else we got here, because if you're on the phone, I'm coming to you in a second. This is an excuse to hear a little bit more music.
How about something fun? The Rossini, Barbara of Seville, probably familiar to many.
Okay. I'll put that underneath us. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is never what I sound like in the shower. It's always what I think I sound like. Let me go ahead and read a couple of emails, though, and then I'll get back to your phone calls. And here's a beautiful one, because I think Deborah brought up something that's important. Opera wasn't always, and isn't really, but sometimes viewed as untouchable, only for the elite, etc. Emily writes to us the following. I was 12 years old when my Italian teacher at Frederick Douglass took a group of us to see Il Trovatore. I didn't understand much of the words, but I felt the music. I loved the beautiful costumes and felt a part of the beauty. It is still one of the most impactful moments in my 47 years of life. What a gift it was to a poor Puerto Rican city girl. That's from Emily.
That's the power of music.
Yeah. And that is, I think, there's a nice Alex Ross essay about Verdi and his ongoing appeal, and the way that he captured sort of drama of people, and he would even tell the people writing the words fewer words because he wanted more sort of music going through. And from another Verdi opera, not from from Nabucco, one of his earlier ones, which is about the temple in Israel, but spoke to people in 19th century Italy in terms of political unity, and then also was something that people sang at a concert not long after September 11th. We have a Verdi chorus there. Just want to... So even just maybe not even knowing the history, hearing that, you feel possibly, Evan, hearing that, you feel something, solidarity or humanity or some feelings, some feels.
Okay, so all the feels.
My own personal motto is music changes lives. It goes in deeply. It sometimes changes lives for a few minutes during a concert or during an opera, for a few hours or... for longer.
I am coming back to your phone calls. I want to answer Chris's question on Twitter. He says, I'm on the JCC site now, not optimized for mobile, and I can't find ticketing info for Dido and Aeneas. Also, nothing on the Facebook page for JCC. And he says, help.
Okay. You can go directly to the Pegasus website, pegasusearlymusic.org, and click on Opera, and there's a link there. If you're at the JCC right now, go to the front desk and ask them. The phone number of the JCC tickets is 461-2000.
But pegasusearlymusic.org to jump online there. And one more email and then phone calls. Connor says, I knew nothing about opera. I was never a fan, but a friend dragged me to Glimmerglass. I was amazed. Opera made me laugh out loud, and it made me weep. The most evil, vile villain ever was presented in Tosca, and his portrayal, the most evocative demonstration of power, appeared again in a comic series, Jessica Jones. The villain licked Tosca's shoulder. Oh, he says, Glimmerglass makes the theater so powerful I can almost understand the music. That's from Connor.
It's beautiful.
And is that an endorsement to you, Anna?
Absolutely. And that is, for good or for ill, there are a lot of directors doing interesting things. That's the other nice thing, is I can see Dido and Aeneas one place and see it another place, and I'm interested to see how do they tell the story, just like the recent Shakespeare productions here in Rochester, Walbird's Macbeth and As You Like It at the Highland Bowl. They took stories that have been told a million times, and one of As You Like It was Woodstock, and Macbeth was sort of Mad Max post-apocalyptic. You have Verdi who did Macbeth, so first of all, he's telling that through opera, and then a production I saw of an opera that set it in like 1930s Eastern Europe, and suddenly this political strife and all the people suffering from the bad leader made a lot of sense surrounded by these tanks. There are also directors that some people say take it too far, you know, Wagner in space and or in a pink cube. Or so there's a lot of, for good or for ill, you can go see interesting productions. There are directors who are taking old stories and reimagining them in different ways.
Okay, I've got to get back to the phones to get more of our listeners in here. Ellen, go ahead. Ellen in Rochester.
Hi. Did I hear you say that you wanted to convert someone to become an opera lover?
Well, that was the goal.
I would love to be converted.
You'd love to be converted. Okay.
Come to Dido and Aeneas.
Because my husband is an opera lover. I mean, mostly French, I would say. And I have sat through 6 hours of The Ring at the Met. And I mean, I go, but I just don't enjoy it the way I love Gilbert and Sullivan operettas and musicals and all of that. And there's a reason.
Okay.
And I can't get over it. It's it sounds to me like the female voices are screeching. And please, I don't mean to be offensive, but that's what it sounds like to me. And I can't deal with it from a physical standpoint. I know it sounds crazy, but it really kind of gets to me. I love every other aspect of opera. But it sounds different from other kinds of music that are sung by women.
All right, stay there, okay. Ellen. I know Deborah Fox from Pegasus Early Music wants to take that one. Go ahead.
Okay, I can't stand those voices either.
What?
Well, let me say something about 19th century opera. They're very large orchestras. The singers have to be trained to sing over a big orchestra without microphones, without anything. And it is quite a physical, mental, and emotional skill that they learn. And it is a certain style of singing. And sometimes it's true, the voice becomes a little distorted, in my opinion. And then also I hear singers singing that music, and it's very beautiful. In the style of music that Pegasus does, if I may push us a little bit, Baroque opera is much smaller. This is chamber opera. The way of vocal production is, I think, much smaller, doesn't need to go as far. The theaters were much smaller. They were literally chambers. Many Baroque operas were first performed in court, in a small chamber. So the musical style of singing and production is much smaller. The orchestras are smaller. Our orchestra is actually 7 pieces. You'll hear a very different vocal style in this. The whole thing is much more like chamber music than large Wagner opera.
And that's where I think it's appropriate to ask Mona to remind us that when we think of opera, again, sometimes we get that narrow viewpoint, but there's sort of different style genres.
Oh, there's all different styles. And I think a almost quick run of the history goes, you start in 1600 with people having a misunderstanding of how Greek theater was performed. And
yes.
So they start singing everything. And there are even these
opera was a mistake?
Opera was a mistake, kind of. Also, they started, like, you would go to a wedding and there would be a little performance, or between acts of a play, they'd have another little performance, and those would be sung. And so then you have, that's in public theaters by the 1630s or 40s in Italy, but at the same time in France, they're just into dance, and Louis XIV has this very centralized, like, I control all operas and all dance, and that's why you have very dance-heavy Baroque opera. That's the stuff that I can't do. I can't. I went to a Lully production, and I was like, if there is one more mannered dance where we see everything in perfect echo, and I could have been hearing Donizetti with everyone singing a million high notes, you know, I want some of the flash and drama.
Mm-hmm. And then something for everybody.
Yeah.
Opera has something for everybody.
And then you go through Handel and people are adding, like, you know, 60 arias and it's not even related to the plot. And then people have dramatic reform. They go back and forth. Mozart, I think maybe you should, well, with the high voices, maybe not Mozart, but then you have Rossini and Bellini and Donizetti, bel canto, praised for both long, beautiful lines followed by all this super high, fast improvisation and great historical plots like Mary, Queen of Scots, told in Italian. And then you have Verdi and Wagner and his development. So, and maybe, and then you have Puccini, and then there's all different experiments, and you cross over with Broadway and cabaret, and also modern things. If we want to hear a rather contemporary one, we can hear the bit of Nixon in China. This is a tribute for you, Evan.
Nixon in China?
Okay. Nixon Adams is in there.
All right, let's see here.
News as a kind of mystery, as a kind of mystery. When I shook hands with Joe and Lai, when I shook hands with Joe and Lai, on this bare field outside Peking, just now the whole world was listening. The whole world was listening. And though we spoke quietly,
so that's Nixon, you know, the president, as depicted by James Maddalena there singing in Adams's opera. And so we have these real life figures. And
I thought you were going to say Shostakovich, Lady Macbeth of the
Mtsenska,
which was a super scandal in his day. So if you think opera is boring, be careful looking up clips of Shostakovich, Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk, because it's really salacious.
And I was going to say I saw this at the Met, but I didn't really. I actually was at Tinseltown Movie Theater watching it live happening from the Met, which is, I think, is another thing democratizing opera. I'm so glad that we have live productions still to go to. I don't think the movie theater will replace that experience. But at the Little, we show productions from the Royal Opera House, and at several area movie theaters, they show the Met. So there, first of all, it's just like seeing a foreign movie. Those titles are right on the screen. You don't even have to look up or down. And you can see some of these, you know, oh, this director is doing this thing, or that singer who isn't coming to Rochester. I can see him from England, but at the movie theater.
By the way, listeners, I'm way late for a break, but I can't take it yet because I got to get through here. Every phone line is filled. This is our opera intervention. Deborah Fox from Pegasus Early Music had this great idea that tell your listeners if you don't get opera, we'll talk about it. And there's a lot going on in our community this summer. So Pegasus is putting on Dido and Aeneas. That's coming up August 10, 12, and 13. PegasusEarlyMusic.org for information there. You're going to be hearing from Finger Lakes Opera in just a moment, but I've got to rip through more of your calls. Let's try to go quickly here. So if I come to you, let's keep it moving. And I'm going to go next to Ken in Rochester. Go ahead, Ken.
Hey, guys. Great show, great title. Listen, there's a ton of music that so many people are already familiar with in regards to opera. From growing up, and cartoons and movies and television and Bugs Bunny and Kubrick and Apocalypse Now, it would only be a couple of steps more for people to just go out there and dig a little bit deeper to figure out some Wagner, some Puccini, some Verdi, etc. That's it.
Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, Ken. Rachel Rasmussen says, I do enjoy some opera, but I wouldn't appreciate it as much without the early exposure to many of us that the Bugs Bunny episodes utilized.
Right.
Notably, the one with Figaro still makes me laugh from Rachel. Rachel, we talked about trying to grab Bugs Bunny music and opera. So, yes, that certainly had an impact on a lot of people. So, okay, let me go back to the phones. And Herman in Riga is next. Go ahead, Herman.
Yeah, I'm in Brighton, actually.
Oh, Brighton, go ahead.
I just wanted to tell a story. I was, when I was a music student at McGill University in Montreal, I liked to practice in the middle of the night when I wasn't even supposed to be in the building, and the janitors that were cleaning there were Italians. And one night I was practicing the bassoon solo from L'Elisir d'Amore by Donizetti, and one of the janitors was cleaning the hall outside, and I heard him singing the words to that opera, which just shows you that in the Italian culture, everybody goes to the opera, a janitor, a doctor, anybody. It's just the way that people hear, everybody goes to movies, no matter what their what class of society they belong to. But I just wanted to just wanted to tell that story.
Well, thank you, Herman. That lines exactly up with what Deb was saying earlier about how sometimes we have to get that sort of intimidated, only on the mountaintop view of opera out of our heads if we're going to take it to the people. Gordon in Penfield. Go ahead, Gordon.
Yes. My wife and I had a really nice experience a few years ago. One of the local restaurants near Little had an opera dinner. And for a set price, you got, a meal, wine pairings. And they had a local opera company come in and sing several operatic pieces in between the courses or during the courses. And my wife and I are not big opera fans, but after that, we were really, really excited. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I haven't seen anything similar, and I'm hoping, that other restaurants, pick up the ball and run with it, because it was a wonderful way to have a great meal and enjoy opera.
Gordon, thank you. If you're lucky, you might get a server at Rocco who sings to you, and that has happened to me before, and that is a lovely experience. Deborah, how do you feel about just that accessibility that he didn't find before, all of a sudden in that dinner setting, maybe broke down a barrier, brought it directly to him?
I think it's a wonderful thing, and I think it actually is very authentic. It goes back to the old idea of opera mixing with your food, your game of cards, your daily life.
Gordon, yeah. I don't know of any others that do it regularly.
I'm inspired to try something at the Little Theater Cafe. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We'll work on it.
Look at this. Ideas coming out of the opera intervention. I'm getting way, way over, but I'm going to take every call, and then we're going to get to that. We're going to talk to Finger Lakes Opera. So, Bill in Brighton, we got to keep it tight. Go ahead, Bill.
Thank you, Evan. One of the things that Deborah has talents in, not only the Baroque reed, the Fiorable that she plays, this huge bass reed. But she also has a talent in fundraising. What you probably don't know is that I read somewhere the production costs of Dido and Aeneia, which is really a tiny opera by 19th century standards, are going to be $175,000. Now, this is not just coming, this can't come from ticket sales. They're coming from her skills in getting private individuals, foundation, and even the government to contribute to make this possible.
Well, Bill, I got to jump in here only because I don't know how much, Deborah, I don't know exactly on the figures there if we're going to agree with every dollar and cent there, but you want to weigh in a little bit there? Go ahead.
Well, opera is very expensive to put on any scale, any opera, because it does involve costumes and sets and rehearsals and musicians and people traveling. It's true. Here's a shout out to our community, which has really helped to fund and made donations, and their various organizations and foundations that have contributed to our efforts for Dido, and I'm so appreciative of that.
All right, thank you, Bill. Trudy, go ahead, Trudy.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm just listening to all these different opinions. I'm an opera fan. I come from Germany. Since my 14th year, we had to attend opera during our music lessons. And I grew up in a little town, well, city, and we had a castle. Across the street was the opera house. And the king at his time would go to the opera, and he went through a tunnel. But, in Germany, every little city has an opera house. And, by the way, you just had the Barber from Seville. Thomas Hampson sang the Barber from Seville. He might be familiar with your mm-hmm. people there. Now, we have gone to the Met quite often. And we also go to the Toronto Opera House. We became friends of the Opera House in Toronto. Now, I have seen Placido Domingo many times. Now, we went to the Little Theater just 2 weeks ago to see Otello. And I have seen Otello at the Met with Placido Domingo. And this Otello came from the Opera House in London with Jonas Kaufmann, who is right now the tenor in the world. He's from Germany. Now, my favorite composers, being from Germany, it's not Wagner. It's Puccini Verdi, Bizet, I like the Russian composers.
And Trudy, let me just jump in only because I've got to fit in an interview with Maestro Floriano in a moment here. But throw us a little curveball with your favorites there. And Trudy's giving us a sense for the history and the diversity of opera that is out there. I want to remind you as we get ready to go to break, we're going to come back and we're going to hear from Maestro Gerard Floriano from Finger Lakes Opera, PegasusEarlyMusic.org. Check out the opera section for what they have coming up with Dido and Aeneas. Let's go to our only break. We'll come back. And what does Maestro Floriano think is what separates opera from the masses and how to change that? That is next on Connections. What are we hearing here, Mona Segetola-Slami and Deborah Fox?
This is actually from Cavaliere Rusticana by Mascagni. It was actually also famously used in the movie. It's called Raging Bull, so the Scorsese movie. So that's people may know that.
Very nice. Well, maybe we'll hear a little bit of Tosca during our interview with Gerard Floriano. The maestro is the director of Finger Lakes Opera, and this is my conversation with him from this morning. They're getting ready to put on Tosca in just a couple of weeks.
Well, yeah, sure. The main barrier is the language, I think. And the main way that probably in the last 20 years or 25 years that we've been able to get around it in the opera world is two ways. One, you can perform the opera in English because there are oftentimes wonderful translations. But then again, sometimes those translations aren't wonderful. And so you want to do it in the original language, in which case we have super titles, which are projected usually above the screen, or if you go to the Metropolitan Opera, they're on the seat in front of you in a number of languages. So whatever your language of preference would be, you can usually find it in your language. So I think that's really opened things up. And then the other thing I think too with opera in the last even fewer years than that, maybe 10 years or so, I think, is the influence of American musical theater and contemporary American musical theater on opera directors, on singer actors, on conductors, musicians, on the whole range of us. And what that has done, I think, is it has brought the drama, the theater of opera, really to the forefront, and the expression of the storyline in realistic terms, you know, if it's a realistic story, especially Verismo opera, and then singer actors and directors who can portray the action and portray the intent of the composer and the librettist in such a way as to really reach contemporary audiences, especially contemporary American audiences in our case.
Jerry, when you have people come up to you and tell you that maybe that was their first opera performance in person to witness, or that this was something that they might not have expected growing up that they would love, what are those moments like, and how often do you encounter that when you've got audience members who say, this was not part of maybe my family's fabric or DNA, but it will be now?
Right. It's really a wonderful, wonderful moment because it tells us all, first of all, that we're reaching people when that happens. And also it tells us, I think what we kind of know is that once you get past these barriers that I just outlined, the language oftentimes and the stiff nature of some of the older stagings and acting, once you get beyond that, it really is oftentimes just a story told through music and through singing. But nonetheless, oftentimes love story, tragic love stories, stories of history, as in the case of Tosca, it's all of that. And so when people can break through those barriers and really see what it is, and that it's really an art form for everybody, for common people as well as for, you know, people who are raised in this stuff and educated about it. You don't have to be raised in this stuff, and you don't have to be educated about it, because it cuts right to the chase of who we are as humans and what makes us, you know, understand each other. I think that's the bottom line in the story of opera. And that's the great thing when people come to an understanding of it is, oh, yeah, it was right in front of me all the time. I just didn't know how to get to it.
So, Maestro, what is the biggest misconception about opera?
I think just that, what I was saying, in that it's something, it's an art form, an elitist art form, or it's something for just someone who's educated musicians, but really it's not. It's, when Verdi and Puccini and Rossini and Wagner And all of the other great composers were writing opera in the heyday of opera in the 19th century. And it was Mozart into the 18th century, late 18th century. They were really just writing stories about people, oftentimes in different settings and different historical time periods, and just trying to tell a story. And so I think it was very much oriented, especially from the 18th century on, it was oriented toward everybody, you know, toward every European town and every European city would have an opera house, and so everybody would go to it. And we certainly have gotten away from that in recent times, but I think we can try to get back to it, because it's really for everybody. And you can go and you can understand it, and you can be a part of it and enjoy it, and, you know, be moved by the drama and be moved by the great singing and be moved by the great music and the orchestra, you know, all at the same time as really understanding what it's about.
You've got Tosca coming up here. So again, part of the opera intervention is bringing in, you know, potential audience members who've never been there. So why don't you introduce Tosca, what excites you so much about it, and let people know how they can come see it.
Great. Yeah, well, Tosca is a wonderful story. It's a timeless story. First of all, it's set originally, when it was set in 1800. It was premiered in 1900, but it was set in 1800, at the time of the Age of Enlightenment and the French Revolution, and Napoleon was fighting with forces inside Italy and going back and forth with the government forces versus the libertarians. Anyway, it's a wonderful story of history, but also it's a wonderful love story, and it's a tragic love story, because caught in the middle of this historical context are Tosca and Cavaradossi, her artist, painter, lover. They're very much in love, but then there you throw in this other character who's quite evil, and his name is Scarpia, and he has designs upon Tosca to take her away from, to steal her away from Cavaradossi, and also at the same time to put Cavaradossi in prison and indeed to execute, to murder Cavaradossi. So it's an incredible, you know, as a lot of operas are, a back and forth tale, but it is at its core the story of a really strong and fiery woman who overcomes all of this and in the end gets her just desserts and goes after the evil one, Scarpia, in a manner which is quite operatic. That's all I can say. and it's and follows him into eternity, if you will, to get back at him.
Very good. So, and people can see it when?
Can see it August 11th and 13th in Canandaigua at the Canandaigua Academy, which is the high school. And they can get tickets by going to fingerlakesopera.org or by calling 585-532-2711. 532-2711.
One more question then, and I'll let you go, because I know this is busy times for you here. You know, you're 2 weeks away, and at this point, I assume everyone who's going to be on stage understands, you know, the basic... we're not starting from scratch at this point, but what is your job in terms of tweaking the nuance? Are you looking for the emotional tone? Are you looking, you know, at the different sort of layers, you know, certain moments? What's the day-to-day like for you in the last 2 weeks?
That's a great question, because it's all about what I do right now and what we're all doing. Obviously, everybody comes with a score memorized and well-known and oftentimes having performed it two or three or four or five times before in different companies. But for me, my job is a couple of things. I prioritize it. First of all, I want to make it as the production and the flow of the music as easy to sing and as accessible to the singers as is possible, because the score is already tough enough. And so I try and make the flow and the pacing and the tempi that I choose to the liking and to the not only to the liking and to the abilities of the singers, but also to make sure that for the audience this thing moves along. You know, it's a fairly long, it's about a 2.5 hour drama, and so you want to keep things moving. And so, but then within that fast-paced forward-thinking kind of shape that we give it, there are major moments and important moments that we want to take our time with. And finding those, and then finding how to access those with the singers and with the orchestra is really what it's about. And then for everybody to kind of sing it into or play it into our soul, so to speak, and then coordinate that with all of the action and all of the physical action that's going on, because as you know, and I'm sure your audience knows, there's a lot of physical fighting and activity that goes on in Tosca. So you know, that's all a part of it. We also bring in a stunt coordinator and a fight choreographer just to make sure everyone's safe and that the action looks authentic, real, but always comfortable for the singers and safe. So it's for me and my job, to get back to your question, it's the shape of the music and finding those great big moments in the score that we want to just kind of take our time with.
That's Gerard Floriano, director of Finger Lakes Opera. They are doing Tosca. Deborah Fox has been here, the artistic director of Pegasus Early Music, August 10th, 12th, and 13th. If you want to see Dido and Aeneas, opportunities for you to dip your toe in. Benjamin on Twitter says, what about videos for us who want us to dip our toe in? Classical 91.5's Mona Segetol Salami is going to put together a little blog post on that in the next couple days.
Yeah, look for the next couple days on classical915.org.
Classical915.org. Mona, thank you. What are we listening to on our way out here?
The Toreadors from Carmen by Bizet.
And Deborah, we will see you with Dido and Aeneas. Thank you so much for the opera intervention this hour.
Thank you for the opportunity.
The opportunity. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Juan Vazquez, Randy Gorbin helping out behind the glass. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's have a great afternoon.